Hello, and welcome to episode 27 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Kate, and I'm here with Chris and Kristen, as usual, and today we are going to be discussing even more comics. Yay!
No one is excited about the comics except for me, but that's fine. I love the comics.
They're so good. I don't know if our listeners are excited about the comics, but if they're not excited about the comics, it's because they haven't read them yet, because they're fucking good, and I don't read comics, so whatever.
There we go. All right, so today we are talking about Star Wars Volume 2, Showdown on the Smuggler's Moon. That's issues 8 through 12 of the series, and they're by Jason Aaron. And we are also talking about Darth Vader Volume 2, Shadows and Secrets, and that's issues 7 through 12 by Kieran Gillen. But before we start, as always, what are we drinking today?
You and I are drinking...
I'm letting you pronounce this one because apparently, like, I can't say Spanish things.
You did a good job last time.
Myself.
I was just being a dickhole.
We are drinking a lovely Spanish Grenache, 2015 La Paca Sonriente. Sure.
Yum! I'm having a Montucky cold snack as per usual.
Delicious. Chris, mm-hmm. You've taken like two levels more of Duolingo Spanish than I have, and you didn't even try to roll your R's. Good job.
No, that's fine. It's fine. We should just have Katie. Well. You should have Katie come over just to read what you're drinking, and then she can leave.
I know, right? Yeah, because that's sustainable. Our friend.
She speaks fluent Spanish. Yeah, she sure is.
Yep. For being very Irish and very Swedish at the same time.
It kills me. Anyway.
Yes.
As always, already off track.
Right? I mean, whatever. You all can talk about Katie. I can just go back to playing Battlefront. Like, that works.
Oh my god.
Battlefront's so good. If you haven't gotten it and you are a gamer / have a system to play it on, you should get it. I realize not everybody has the means to play video games, which is part of the reason books are great. But if you have the means, you should get it, because it's fantastic.
And if you don't have the means, let's be real, some... truly ridiculous human beings who have already played through the entire single player campaign have already put the entire thing up on YouTube. So just, you know, if you're bored at work, and you're allowed to get YouTube at work, and your network isn't blocking you, just watch the cutscenes. It's so worth it.
It's like dead ass like watching a movie. It's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
It's beautiful. Cool.
We're gonna talk about this more early part of next year once more people have had time to get it and play it and finish the campaign and everything. But it's great. All right, anyway, back to what we're actually talking about today. The comics. I think we're going to start talking about Star Wars Volume 2. Does that work for y'all?
Yeah.
Sure.
Awesome.
Quinn is not going to Kool-Aid Man through the door. He's here already, and also it is raining very hard. So if any of that does not get edited out, those are the phantom noises.
All right, noted.
Nice. I mean, our dryer is going because we have to pack for Thanksgiving, so if anybody can hear that... Sorry, I guess.
No, you can't hear that. Fuck Thanksgiving. I'm just recording in our living room, and he's watching the football, which, as he should be. It is all right. Sunday evening.
So, I got nothing, so I'm just going to go back to the Star Wars.
Go back to the Star Wars.
Talk about the Star Wars. One of the characters, probably the most major character that we meet in Volume 2 of the Star Wars comics, is Santa Solo, except her name is not Solo, and she may or may not be Han's wife. She's not. She's actually not Han's wife.
She's not. Are we saying it's Santa or Sana?
It's a good question. Keeks, what are you saying?
Oh, I'm saying Santa, but that's because I have a horrible East Coast accent.
I don't know. I can go either way.
It doesn't matter. It's. I mean, we don't say Han and Han the same. So, I mean, we do, but
people don't. But it's fine.
Some people, idiots on the internet who are wrong, do.
Some people are wrong. Yeah, some people pronounce Han incorrectly. However, nobody has explicitly told me, to my knowledge, how to pronounce Santa and or Sana Solo. So,
I think that's right.
All right, so it's just going to be free for all, guys. Whatever.
Yep, basically.
Anyway.
But anyway, so we know who Santa Solo is now. Have they told her real name?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know who Santa Staros is now. And we kind of get a really kind of funny series of interactions between her and Han and Leia. And one thing that, Kate, I think you...
This is me, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm, like, leading this discussion with the first point of zero, so there's just no seamless way to transition it, so you go.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the most obvious parallel between characters that we could probably draw from this little set that we've been talking about is, of course, between Leia and Sana, because Sana's pretending to be Han's wife, Leia becomes Han's wife.
Will be, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like that, you know, all that sort of thing. And also, we see Han being caught between, of course, Sana representing his old life, you know, being a smuggler, being a scoundrel, etc., whatever. And then she finds out that he's a rebel and he's actually with Leia and he's as probably as wanted by the Empire as she is. And so we've got these two women kind of counterbalancing each other. And I'm wondering, I don't know if I want to call them foils. And so I was just wondering how you guys felt about that interaction. And if we want to call them foils, like, is that problematic?
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to call them foils just because Leia also turns on Han. And, like, there's this weird...
You're so right.
There's this weird dynamic where, like, he's kind of jumping from one side to the other based on, like, who's saying they're going to fuck him over. So I think they're not really... Well, it's true. I don't know whether or not that means they're not foiled, but it didn't feel very foil-like because of the Han factor.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing that, I don't know, even if they're not foils, maybe a little bit problematic, is just kind of like the dichotomy between Leia and Santa, right? Because you have Leia, who is obviously white, who is a princess.
She's dressed in white all the fucking time.
Always dressed in white, except on Endor.
Yes. And then you have Santa, who's a dark-skinned black woman.
Yes, exactly. And also a smuggler and slash... Bounty Hunter, I think, was confirmed.
Ish. Yeah.
Quasi-Bounty Hunter, at the very least.
Willing to turn them over to the Empire, right? For money.
Yeah.
Whether or not that makes him a bounty hunter, who knows, but...
Yeah, very morally suspect from the standpoint of the Rebellion and the characters that we're initially rooting for. And so, it's interesting because, like, on the one hand, like, if you want to introduce characters of color into Star Wars, like, you want to introduce a dark-skinned black woman who... you know, has this relationship with Han and fit her into the story in a great way. But on the other hand, it is, I think, a little bit problematic because at least when we first meet her, she is the enemy, so to speak. Like, she is the one threatening to turn Leia over to the Empire and take Han with her. And I don't know, it was just kind of interesting to watch how that developed into her becoming a larger part of the, you know, the crew, so to speak. But then that was because she was saved by Leia. And it's, again... some problematic parallels happening.
It's, I just thought of this, but it's kind of, you can see parallels in Sana and Leia's relationship and Sabine and Ketsu's relationship, I think, on Star Wars Rebels. Because again, Ketsu is a black woman who is coded as queer. And, you know, she's a bounty hunter. She works for Black Sun. She, you know, Sabine says, "You left me for dead." Like, what's up with that, Star Wars?
Yeah. It is definitely a bit of a trope that Star Wars goes back to, particularly right now, when inserting women of color into the universe. You know, that you have this... They have their positive counterpart. And the one person we don't really see that from so far, at least, is Dr. Aphra, who we'll talk about a little bit more later. But that's one area in which... you know, she kind of stands alone among the women of color characters. I will also say, just to bring a little bit of background to it, after these two volumes, there's a crossover between Star Wars and Darth Vader called Vader Down. And then after that, volume 3 of Star Wars, Rebel Jail, dives much more into who Santa is. and gives her her own character and her own backstory and her own motivations without just being the anti-Leia.
Okay, I was going to ask you, like, I was like, I certainly hope we get more about her. Oh, yeah, oh,
no,
Lord.
No, she gets, I mean, I don't want to say she gets better because she's fantastic in this and I love reading her, but, like, the representation of her gets more nuanced and more in-depth.
Thank you, Star Wars Jesus.
That's good. Yeah, right. What year did that come out?
This
isn't like a quiz. I'm just wondering. Come on, Chris. You're supposed to fucking know. No. I'm just wondering, like, how long it took them to do that from, like, a Star Wars stuff being problematic sort of way.
Oh, from, like, the first issue that Sana appears in to the one where they explain her character?
Correct.
Okay. The first issue that she appears in was released in June 2015. And then the next, it was about 6-7 months later.
That's kind of rude. Okay.
Well, in comics time, that's like, I don't know. That's,
I mean, yeah,
short,
it was like a volume and a half. So it was like five, six issues.
And I'm, so, you know what? I'm willing to give them the benefit of they were probably planning on doing that.
Well, yeah.
Which is good, but also they should have done a better job not making her seem like a terrible bad guy, except for we all loved her, so.
Right. I mean, it's like, don't get me wrong, I love this character, but I've heard from others who have more of a stake in what she represents, at least in terms of diversity, that they weren't quite happy with how she was introduced, at least. So, just wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I at least like that they both get annoyed with Han.
Yes.
That makes me happy.
Let's talk a little bit about Han.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit. I mean, like, obviously there's plenty more that we could talk about with Leia and Santa, but for the moment we can go on and just, like, kind of learn, like, what do we see from Han based on how he relates to Leia versus Santa or both of them at the same time?
He always, like, deals a lot in negatives, I would say, with both of them. Like, one of them will, like, purport something, and he'll be like, no, not that. Which is pretty funny, because that's just, like, very...
defensive.
Yeah, because that's very Han Solo. I mean, that's the character that we know him as. It's like, who are you calling... what scoundrel? Like,
yeah,
calm down.
It is interesting to see, like, his... character is, because his character is so, like, high and mighty and, you know, very cocky, and around Leia and now Santa as well, he is completely on his heels at all times, and, like, they're just, these two women, like, can completely destroy him with, like, really no effort.
There's this some of you may have seen this post floating around Tumblr, but there's that, Keeks, you probably know this one, the one with Han, where it's just like, oh yeah, Han is such an impressive, you know, badass smuggler. He's, you know, he's totally, like, not in love with Leia, and flirts really horribly, and has no idea what to say to her, and isn't a bumbling idiot who can't fucking hotwire a door, even though he flies the fucking Millennium Falcon sort of thing. And it's just like, and the point being that Han Solo is a giant fucking nerd, even though he tries to act like he's not, and this just reinforces that, and I was really tickled by it.
Accurate. Like, we see that from the very beginning, too. Boring conversation, anyway.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes, I mean, how could I forget mentioning that? Like, Jesus Christ, you are not smooth at all, my guy.
It's always my favorite thing totally. To mention, sorry. Like, I feel like I bring that up anytime we talk about Han, but it's just...
I mean, why would you not?
It's peak. So peak.
Yeah. And I feel like this volume was kind of like a really, like, kind of a pivotal point in Han's development in what we see. Because, like, you have in A New Hope, like, and we talked about this when we read Volume 1, Skywalker Strikes, back in episode, I want to say 9.
Yes.
97%
sure.
Yes, episode 9. Uh-huh. So you should go back and listen to it if you don't know what I'm talking about. But we talked about how this kind of bridges the gap for the characters. And you have in A New Hope, to focus on Han specifically, you very much do have this cocky smuggler, scoundrel, you know, on first name terms with Jabba the Hutt, like, very deep in the underworld, even though he's currently trying to, you know, escape from Jabba. But he's still, he's very much a part of his, like, old, like, his negative lifestyle, his, you know, I already said scoundrel, and I'm really trying not to repeat myself, but we're just going to do it, because otherwise it's just going to be awkward silence while I think of words.
He's a nerf herder.
He's a nerf herder.
I have a stupid movie question before we get off of Han and Jabba. Wasn't that scene that they inserted with Han and Jabba not there originally?
Yeah, it was added in whatever the deluxe edition was in the 90s.
Okay. So, was it supposed to be part of the movie? Or did they just, like, do that?
Yeah, it's like the George Lucas director's cut. Okay. Well, because, I mean, they filmed it.
Well, I don't know. It's actually such bad CGI that I couldn't tell.
Well, I mean, Jabba whether or not is, it was. They didn't, like, CGI everybody. It's not like the film's live action and then it turns to Clone Wars animation for that one scene and then turns back.
I wish it did. Okay, sorry. That was just an off-the-wall question because I was like, I know I've heard rumors that that was not in the original, but I didn't know when it was inserted. So thank you for indulging me.
No worries. But what was I saying? Oh, but then in Empire... So you have Han in A New Hope. But then in Empire Strikes Back, he's this completely different person. Obviously, he's still very cocky, but he, you know, for lack of a better term, has a conscience. He is willfully fighting for the rebellion. He is, you know, really contemplating a long-term relationship with Leia. He is making responsible choices, you know, telling Chewie not to fight the Empire because he needs to protect the princess. And so, like, these comics really bridge the gap, and I feel like this volume in particular is a really good look at the old Han versus the new Han, because you have, obviously, the new Han with, you know, he's in the last issue of Skywalker Strikes, he's, like, kind of trying to put the moves on Leia, of course, with the Corellian wine. And,
God damn it.
But then you also have him being like, we have to go save Luke. And then you, with Santa, he's very much like, look, we're not married. That was us. Like, I'm sorry that I stiffed you on your cut. It's gonna be okay. Like, and you have this view of him as a smuggler and this view into his old life and, like, you get the feeling he kind of is being torn in two different directions there by having those two women in the same place.
He really fucks up with both of them, though, doesn't he? Like, Leia's mad at him for just for everything, for existing right now, because, like, because she has...
I think he's just good at really pissing people off.
He does have that unique talent, doesn't he? And then Santa's mad because, like... first of all, he sifted her, and also, I mean, they faked an entire wedding ceremony, and you don't just do that! Like, who does that? That's fucking bonkers!
Yeah, like, it's just, like, a weird situation, and that's why, like, I know that, like, some other people have been wondering if, I know the popular opinion, the popular theory is that Thandie Newton is Rey Sloane, in the Solo movie, but...
The popular hope.
Yeah, the popular hope. But, I mean, it's also very possible that she's Santa. Like, there's no reason that she's not Santa. Or she couldn't be Santa, rather. One thing that, like, kind of struck me is that, like, so you have this, like, obviously they're fighting on that moon, and then they're fighting in the Volt Cobra, and, like, there's no, you know, anything. But then when they get to Nar Shaddaa, they, like, the first scene that you have of Han and Leia and Santa on Nar Shaddaa is when Han is shooting Dengar and, like, very much playing the hero. And you kind of have him standing next to Leia with Santa in the background, kind of merging his two personalities. Because on the one hand, he's, you know, he's shooting, literally shooting from the hip. He's shooting at another bounty hunter that's after him. But on the other hand, he's doing it for reasons of, you know, family with Chewie, and, like, they're there to support Luke, and, like, you kind of have this merging of the two identities for at least a small period of time.
Yes.
Cool.
All right.
Do we want to talk more about the Solo movie, or can I say, like, speaking of people who make bad decisions and are stupid, let's talk about Luke.
I just want to say one thing. I just... No, it's good. I just kind of wonder... Obviously, Han has that potential in him to be you know, a good person and a selfless person and all this other stuff. And I kind of wonder what seeds we're going to see in him as a young man that leads him to become Han Solo, the, you know, the war hero.
Yeah.
Rather than Han Solo the smuggler. I wonder if we're going to get any of that. I hope we do. I don't know.
I hope we do. I hope we get seeds, but I hope we don't get too much. Like, one of my big fears is that they're going to, like, do it very much hero's journey, because it's Star Wars. They're going to do it very much hero's journey within Solo, and he's going to start out the smuggler and murderer and whoever. And then by the end, he's already going to be heroic, and then it's going to be like, all right, so how do you, like, regress to the douchebag in the beginning of A New Hope?
Sure.
So, like, I hope that... I don't know. If you've listened before, we're very lukewarm on Solo.
Yeah,
and
that...
are very worried about it, so we'll see how it comes out.
That, if it's Star Wars and they put him on the hero's journey and they do that at the expense of Lando, I'm going to... literally starts screaming at the theater. So yeah,
looking forward to that
the trailer. So I like, because I always forget that, like, Lando is in this movie.
Yo,
I know. I'm very nervous. Excited about this movie. Donald Glover.
Oh, I'm so excited! Oh, I want a Lando movie. I don't want a Solo movie. I want a Lando movie.
Sam, nobody wanted this movie.
Anyway, moving on to other people who make bad decisions. Kristen.
Yeah. Luke is so dumb.
He's so stupid in this.
Yep, he really is. He's like, I'm gonna go to the smuggler's moon. Why would you
I'm gonna walk into a bar that was, like, even worse than the Mos Eisley Cantina, where I already got my ass kicked once, and tell people that I want to go to the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, and everything, and I have no money to pay them, and everything is gonna be fine.
Did anyone else feel like that was a kind of a weird mischaracterization of Luke? Like, it felt like what we keep complaining about in Rebels, if you've listened to previous episodes, we love shitting on Ezra. And most of that is because his character development is so, you know, he'll take one step forward and then he'll take 10 steps back, and that's what it feels like for Luke here. And I'm just kind of wondering, I don't know.
It felt weird.
It felt really weird to me, I don't know.
I kept, and I've read it before, and this time, even though I knew it was going to happen as well, I kept waiting for, like, the other shoe of his brilliant plan to drop. And it just never did, and you're just actually that stupid.
Like, and, like, Luke in the movies is not that fucking stupid, so I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, like...
And, like, he's naive. He's not stupid.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I don't know. That part was definitely weird. I mean, and then you get part, you know, back to kind of, like, the traditional Luke of, you know, him, like, chasing the guy and, like, using the Force to jump and then, you know, using his powers to open all the holocrons, but he's still... I mean, he's still just very much a farm boy in this, and, like,
sure is.
Not in a good way. Like, he's still very much like, all right, like, I know we're fighting the rebellion and they killed Ben, but, like, I still don't have my power converters and it's really starting to become a problem for me.
Kristen, how do you feel about all this?
I mean, I told you that I thought Luke was stupid, so that was, but it's kind of annoying, right? Like, I don't know, though, because we also kind of see him, like, making questionable decisions, and we're not really challenged to, we're kind of challenged to think of them as questionable decisions, but it's like, you know, we want him to stay, there are two sides of us, right? We want him to stay and finish his training, but we also want him to go, like, save everybody, even though he's going into a trap. So I think it's very much like we know that there's this side to Luke, but also he's just like, he's also super young in this. And I think this characterization, like, tracks with him in the last comic, obviously, because it's a continuation of that. So I think they did a pretty good job of just, like, showing that continuation of the characterization that they put forward there. But I'm just wondering, like, how are we going to get from this to who we see in Empire Strikes Back?
Right. I mean...
Or if that's that big of a jump, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously these comics are supposed to fill in that 3 or 4 year gap between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And, I mean, that's a lot of time. Like, he still has time to, you know, inch his way along into being a half, you know, a partially competent Force user by the time he gets to Yoda. But what I probably found most interesting in this, in terms of his taking steps toward being the person he is in Empire Strikes Back, is that we've already said, like, a bunch of times that Luke is a pretty unorthodox Jedi. You know, he's, for all intents and purposes, he's already a quote-unquote great Jedi by the time we get to Return of the Jedi. And the piece of the puzzle that really worked for me is that, obviously, Yoda didn't really do a whole lot of lightsaber training with him. You know, Luke was fucking carrying around a Yoda backpack for 90% of the time he was in Dagobah. So,
thank God.
Yes, what really worked for me was when he gets captured by Gracchus the Hutt and the Game Master tries to teach him how to fight. And he's still fucking terrible, but at least, you know, he has some basic skills in the back of his head that he can draw upon, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, it's true. He's just still very bad. Like, it's, like, funny because, like, the Game Master, who is not a Jedi, and who, like, we find out at the end is basically a stormtrooper. Like, you know, a special forces type deal, but, like, very much a stormtrooper. Just, like, beat the living crap out of him with a lightsaber. Like, he is not force sensitive. You know, the Game Master is not force sensitive. Like, there's no logical reason Luke should be doing this bad, except for the fact that, like, he's just garbage.
Jesus!
Sorry, Luke gets better. I don't know, if you know me, Luke is not my favorite character in Star Wars, actually. And this comic, I think, is... I think many people would agree is kind of Luke's worst phase, when he's, like, in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, as we've been talking about. He's this kind of, like, very childish mentality trying to struggle with his position in the world, which is fine. Like, it's very understandable. And, like, it's, you know, human, again, to use speciesist terms. But, like, he's just, like, you read this comic, and, like, and it's not a reflection on the comic. Like, it's accurate, but it's just a reflection on the character. You read this comic, and you're just, like, sorry, How'd this dude beat Vader and the Emperor? Like, how'd that happen?
Chris, I just want you to know that friend of the pod, @ChainJoy26 on Twitter, is gonna come beat the shit out of you for like, make fun of Luke, so.
I know.
Me
I
too,
know.
No, sorry, Shannon.
There's nothing wrong with Luke. He's just like, whatever. I'm not gonna dig myself a bigger hole.
I know, I feel like I do nothing but shit on Luke and the redemption arc. So, great. I'm a bad Star Wars fan.
Can I make a side note here while we're feeling awkward?
Yes.
So we get introduced to the idea of holocrons, and specifically Jedi holocrons in the Clone Wars, and they come up again in Star Wars Rebels, obviously, if you've seen the whole Maul arc in Rebels. But they're always treated like these, and they are, but they're treated like these really special singular artifacts, and then I was reading this comic, and Luke goes to Gracchus the Hutt, and he fucking opens, like, I don't know, 30 fucking holocrons, and I was like, how are there this many holocrons? Like, I was led to believe there were, like, I don't know, probably the one that shows up in Clone Wars and in Kanan, so that's the only fucking holocrons there are in the entire galaxy. I was just like, where did all these fucking holocrons come from? Did I just, like, sit down at the end of the day? Like, dear fucking diary, I invented a new lightsaber form today? Like, I don't understand.
I mean, it kind of feels like it, based on Luke opening them all up.
I'm sure Chris is always, as we say, steeped in the lore more than me and Kate are. But weren't they, like, all in the Jedi Temple? I assume, like, the vast majority of them got destroyed. But it sounded like, I always thought that there were, like, a lot. Because don't they break into, doesn't Cad Bane break into the Jedi Temple, and, like, he has to go find a specific holocron?
Yes, that is, in fact, the case. So,
oh
yeah,
my god, did I remember something?
I'm so proud of you!
I think the idea is most of them were in the Jedi Temple and got destroyed when the temple was burned. But, I mean, then you had people like Master Balaba and Kanan, obviously, and, like, others who had holocrons with them out in the field.
Right.
You know, whether that was, you know, they never really made clear why that would be you know, maybe teachers record their experiences for posterity. But so what I want to know is, how did Gracchus get them all? Like, and that's not really relevant to anything other than my curiosity, but like, he has a very extensive collection of Jedi, like, souvenirs.
I mean, when you have Hutt finances backing you and you can just hire as many bounty hunters as you want to just run around and collect shit from old Clone Wars battlefields, I feel like you can amass a decent collection pretty quickly.
This is true.
Yeah, plus, like, I bet a lot of the people who ended up with them didn't know what they were. So,
he was probably like,
yoink, I want that. I'm going to pay you nothing for it, or whatever.
That's probably true as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, that was my side.
So, yeah, that was, I think that kind of cool. Takes us through all the discussion to be had in Showdown on the Smuggler's Moon. This was a very plot-heavy volume. It wasn't super development-heavy, but, you know, as we talked about, there was definitely some good nuggets in there.
Wait, can I ask what I know is a controversial question, since I, like, know nothing about the fandom but little bits and pieces.
Yes.
Is everybody, like, mad at this comic because it had all these, like, non-Force users using lightsabers?
If they are mad, they should go away.
Is that a real controversial question, or is that just, like, the stupid people on the internet who just, like, don't watch the movies?
Also, the idiots on the internet who are wrong?
I mean, like, sorry. I said, stupid people. Sorry, that was rude.
Sorry, we have a specific thing that we call them.
This is true. But no, I mean, like, I don't know. I, like, have never gotten the feeling that, like, people, like, you know, quote unquote, in the fandom, like, which makes it sound very high and mighty, but, like, people who are very, like, into the Star Wars fandom, like, I don't think that's ever been a thing where, like, people are like, yeah, like, I'm a knowledgeable person about Star Wars, and I am telling you factually that only Force users can use lightsabers, because there's fucking textual evidence in the movies. Like, Han uses a lightsaber to cut open a Tauntaun. I don't know. Also, side note, like, R2 stealing, like, 5 different lightsabers and just, like, popping them out to everybody one by one is, like, my favorite moment in these comics. R2's just the best.
He's such a good dog.
Yes, he is the best.
This comic does R2 so well.
Sorry, I didn't realize. I thought that was, like, a legitimate question that I had, and then I just realized I just did, like, a huge long subtweet to my ex because he's the one who brought that up to me. So, sorry.
To be fair,
do you guys remember that?
No, I do. And honestly,
yeah, because I asked you guys, and I was like, this is illegitimate, right?
Yeah, I said to Kate when that came up that you should have dumped him. So, like, I could have saved you a few months, but, you know, whatever.
Thank you. I figured it out. Sorry, I didn't. I just needed to own up to that because I didn't mean for it to be a subtweet, but it was.
It's fine.
You should tell him to listen. Oh my God. Is he on Twitter? You should tell him.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to. I think I have him blocked.
God, how did you guys get shadier than me? I didn't think that was possible.
We have white people shit.
I do know his work address, though. Maybe I'll just mail him an envelope full of cards from, like, my work address with no name on it. Like, as a return address, you know?
Smart. No.
That
no,
would be really like not petty at all.
It'd be, like, very creepy. It'd be, like, the podcast version of, like, horse's head in the bed.
Or a cow's tongue.
I'm not ready for that, Chris.
Or a cow's tongue.
Sure.
Brought it back to Star Wars. You're all welcome.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
I was going down a dark path.
Sorry,
anyway,
guys.
Speaking of going down a dark path, let's talk about Darth Vader.
Oh my God. The Darth Vader comics are so good. They're so good.
They're so fucking good. Oh my God.
Personal opinion, I enjoy them more than Star Wars comics.
Same.
But, I mean, that's also just because Vader is my favorite character in Star Wars, so.
Anyway, neither here nor there.
Anakin's exactly. A shady bitch.
I made a section on this outline called Anakin is still the most Anakin. And should I just read what this bullet point is?
Oh, I expect you to.
Oh, okay. So the bullet point on the outline is, under Anakin is still the most Anakin, is, bitch made the biggest mess and now has to clean it up. Oh my fucking God.
Yeah, I mean, it's not wrong.
Like, is it not the most in-character thing that Anakin decided to, like, go behind the back of an authority figure, fuck some shit up and then have to try to clean up his mess and, you know, is foiled at every turn.
Yeah, it's very Anakin. Like, you very much still get the Anakin parts of Vader in this. Because, like, you know, you can absolutely see, like, you know, let's say Clone Wars Anakin, because that's kind of when he's at the height of his powers. Like,
Anakin, no.
Anakin, yes. But you, like, you can absolutely see Anakin being like, I'm going to think out this whole complicated plan to get exactly what I want, and no one will be the wiser. And then he gets to, like, 80%, and he's like, eh, that's enough, let's just go. And then he spends the rest of his time cleaning up all the shit he missed.
And by cleaning up, we mean murdering, but anyway.
Well, I mean, that's the difference between Anakin and Vader now that we're seeing, though.
Mm.
Like, Vader, the brutality is something that is uniquely Vader-esque.
That's true.
True. Stray blaster fire, LOL, as if.
Yeah, that was, I loved all his little asides, like, oh dear. That was unfortunate.
And I was like, that is most unfortunate.
Most unfortunate. I'm here to ask the important questions, like, why did Anakin stop speaking in contractions?
Maybe his voice thing can't handle contractions.
I don't know. I always thought he, like, still had, like, I always thought he was still speaking. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's a funny.
Maybe his burnt-ass lungs just can't even, like, draw breath enough for, oh, God, I don't even know.
His lungs can't handle apostrophes. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean.
That's canon. That's
yes, that is canon. You know, Vader and the people that I have to edit at my job, but never mind.
I mean, I feel like it's also an intimidation thing, right? Like, I feel like he's kind of learned to talk in an intimidating manner.
That's true. I'm sure that he's cultivated this, you know, this whatever, this self.
Oh, this cult of invincibility that he has around him. Absolutely. This cult of terror. Well, you know, whenever we get around to reading Lords of the Sith, you get, like, kind of a firsthand view of that, because it's relatively early in the reign of the Empire, and you get, you know, Vader, you know, going on missions and shit. But, I mean, and we get it in, you know, Rogue One, too, just this, like, cult of fear that he cultivates around himself. But at the same time, we kind of see him at, not when he's vulnerable, but when he's a little precarious in this comic, which is a position we don't usually see him in.
So this is a stupid question, and I think it's just me being stupid and not reading enough comics to, like, follow some stuff. Anakin planned for Aphra to steal all the shit, right? Steal the monies. Right. Okay, I thought so.
Yes.
So this the whole time
and then
he's
use that money to get Luke.
Right. Okay. I thought so. I was like, okay. Because, well, like, he doesn't, I was surprised that he didn't just, like, accidentally, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the new guy's name, the, like, PI that they hired to hang out with him.
Inspector Thanoff.
Sure. Thanoff. I'm surprised that he didn't just, like, shadily, like, push Thanoff off a cliff or something. Like, I was like, because I don't understand, like, where he's drawing the line, because it's like, he just, like, kills a bunch of random people who, like, would probably have helped him, whereas this guy's seems like smart enough to blow his cover, and he's just like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's a question I had as well, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of just a recognition of Thanoth's skill. Like, because you see him, like, very, kind of, you know, like, dripping with sarcasm at first when he first meets Thanoth. And then, like, kind of slowly, kind of grudgingly becomes like, that was actually a really smart idea. I hate you, but I respect you. Like you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like a grudging, like, respect and recognition that the Empire does actually need people like Thanoff.
That is,
yeah, he's, like, super, not that I'm surprised that he's smart, but, like, Aphragos is such great lengths to make sure nobody can figure anything out, and he was like, here's all the evidence that it's not what it seems. I was like, oh, you're very smart.
I mean, that's a pretty true move for both Anakin and Vader's character, that he trust people who are super competent. Because we see in the Clone Wars cartoon, when Anakin first meets Tarkin, he absolutely has a grudge of respect for Tarkin's absolute competence, even though, you know, Ahsoka's super over him and doesn't like him at all. And Anakin's like, nah, this guy gets it. He knows what he's doing. He's cool. And Ahsoka's like, okay. And we're all like, that guy's fucking terrible. And Anakin's like, nah, this is good. And we're just like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of that, you know, like the point of empire and the point of fascism is efficiency, right? Like, imperial efficiency. And, like, Thanos and Vader are kind of different aspects of that, for sure. But, like, Vader, I feel like, recognizes a compatriot when he sees one.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. I mean, I guess my point is, like, it's I look at it as, like, I've written people off for less. Like, when he killed the, God, I don't remember names. It's fine. The guy with all the information that Santa gets.
The ante?
Where Luke, yeah, that guy.
Scream. His name was Scream.
The guy looks like a fucking
His name
Scream
was Scream. Yeah, and I guess I don't even think he was gendered, so Scream. Like, I feel like Vader knew that he knew a fuckload of stuff, and he just killed him anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean,
well,
Vader's nothing if not single-minded.
There's that, well, and also, we're talking about competence, right? And the guy was just like, as soon as Vader walked in, he's like, I'm gonna tell you goddamn everything, and Vader's like, oh, Jesus, you're fair. A fucking idiot, please die.
I don't know. I'm, like, just sitting here, like, Vader's written people off for less. Like, and by written off,
that's also
a
fair
murdered.
Statement. Yes.
Yeah.
Totally just murdered forever.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, you definitely get the feeling that, like, even if he wasn't trying to cover his tracks, the ante was not surviving that conversation.
Yeah, but he didn't know at that point that Aphra had Luke's location. But I guess he also didn't know whether or not the ante knew. I don't know.
Yeah, I think
I was just like, that's crazy.
Yeah, you definitely get some, like, it's funny, and we'll kind of transition to talking a little more about Aphra in a bit, but Aphra is, like, the one person who outsmarted him. Like, not super outsmarted him, but it's like, all right, I'm gonna kill you. I'm actually not gonna kill you because you have something I want.
Yep.
And Aphra kind of, like, being able to realize that.
One other, like, shady Anakin thing that Anakin was doing was just like, don't question the Force. I'm like, Anakin, you're not, Vader, you're not using the
Anakin,
Force
please.
For this. You're just, you're just being an asshole. Yeah. You know the answer because it was you.
Yeah.
Don't tell him not to question the Force. You're being a dick.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was very Anakin. I was like, I can totally picture Ahsoka, just like him, like trying to tell Ahsoka something and her being like, you made that up. And him just being like, don't question the Force.
Oh my God, absolutely.
Or like, Obi told me to do it. And
right? No, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Anakin or Vader, we've spent a lot of time talking about how he's the same as Anakin, but there is one big change that happens at this point in the comic. And that's that he's very clearly, what?
Do more?
Yeah, why not? Sorry, we're refilling.
Oh, it's fine. I already asked Quinn to get me another one, so, and he did. Because he's
that's
the
great.
Best.
And presumably understands that non-force sensitive individuals can use lightsabers.
I think he does understand that.
Damn,
I was like,
it.
How is your Star Wars? And I'm like, it's great. Thank you.
What was I saying? Oh.
Also, he made delicious dinner tonight, just as a side note.
Well, that's good.
Bok choy, vermicelli noodles, tofu. It was just so good. So many good things. Sweet potatoes, it was all in the Instant Pot.
That sounds great.
So good.
Okay, we gotta get
it. It was really good.
Oh, fuck.
We gotta plan out our New York food. Anyway.
Yo.
back to real discussions.
I'm not editing any of that out, because this is also Food Talk Pod.
Right. So one thing that we do see change in Vader is that in A New Hope, and certainly, you know, in obviously Rogue One, but certainly in the first Vader comic, he's still very much the Emperor's apprentice, and Sidious is his master. And you see, you know, that chatter a little bit, you know, like the window of the Devastator, like,
LOL.
LOL. But at the end of Volume 1, where he finds out that Luke, that the Death Star pilot is his long-lost son. But here, you kind of have Vader on the loose. Like, Vader is very clearly operating outside his mandate, outside of what would be allowed by the Emperor. And really, for the first time in his career, one of the first times in his life, really just consciously operating without a master. I mean, obviously he, you know, became a full-fledged Jedi Knight and Obi-Wan was no longer his master, but he still worked with Obi-Wan and thought of him like a brother.
Wow.
You were my brother, Bananakin.
Oh my god. You know, that you say that, Palpatine isn't even in this volume, is he?
Nope.
He doesn't show up at all.
Nope.
That's interesting.
Nope.
Yeah, and so you get this background perspective to, you know, when you see in Empire Strikes Back, and he's just already jumped to, together, you and I will overthrow the Emperor and rule the galaxy as father and son. And you see the roots of that here. Like, he's already making machinations to not be the subordinate one anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he's got this absolutely single-minded focus on finding Luke. And that's really interesting. I mean, being, like, that part of his personality isn't necessarily surprising, but, I mean, he hasn't really connected to another being on that kind of personal level since Padme died, right? So it's
yep.
it's pretty fascinating to see, you know, that once he thinks that's within his grasp again, that's what drives him.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we kind of get the larger story. Like this comic in a weird way is like the almost like Rogue One, in that Rogue One gave us so much context to the Rebels have won their first battle and stolen the Death Star plans in the crawl of A New Hope. And now in the crawl of Empire Strikes Back, we now have so much more context and background to Darth Vader has become obsessed with finding young Skywalker. Like, obsession is
totally,
like, putting it lightly at
yep.
this point.
Absolutely.
I also like how they, I don't even remember now, what was Vader supposed to be doing? The Grand Admiral was like, you, the twins do this, the
and he was supposed to be finding
Mon Calamari.
He was supposed to be finding
Oh yeah, he was supposed to be finding the thief. So he was like, LOL, I'm going to do all three of these things. Because I know who the thief is, and it's me.
Yeah, and like,
I just thought that
again,
was very funny.
It does relate back to Luke. It doesn't relate back to the Empire. It doesn't relate to the Rebels at all. Like, you know, he gets to take out some Rebels at the end, but that's more just to cover his tracks so that he doesn't have to capture Aphra.
Also,
like,
that's like,
I don't know.
It's very Kylo with BB-8. Until he's like, she's seen the map. I know. He's like, I want the droid. I suggest you get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
I'm just thinking of family lineage.
Trash babies.
Trash babies.
Trash grandpa. God damn it. About Aphra?
Well, I was going to... Keeks started saying something, and I feel like I've been talking the whole episode, so I just decided to stop. And, like,
no, you haven't. You've been good. Oh, I know what the fuck I was going to say. It was gone, and now it's back. It's
Yay.
That I thought it was very interesting... Oh, I'm going to sneeze. Hold on. Oh, maybe I'm not. I thought it was very interesting that they went after...
Last 2 minutes have really been an emotional roller coaster for
everybody. Oh, man. that they had the idea to go after the coroner... And also, like, that's how we know that he doesn't know about Leia, is because the coroner dies being like, yes, he had a son.
And this is why you don't ask leading questions.
That's right.
I did enjoy that. That was fascinating. That was
super fascinating. I thought it was really good. And I thought that was, like, a really interesting, good way to do that because, like, obviously Vader knew that she was pregnant, but didn't know anything about the kids and like had all these suspicions about Luke because Obi-Wan's horrible at hiding people.
Maternal healthcare in the galaxy far, far away is horrible.
Why didn't he just change his last name? all great questions.
Nobody asks last names. Oh, far, far away. Obi-Wan to Ben is all anybody cared about. Nobody knew that also, they were looking for Luke.
Also, LOL, they made Anakin go back to Sand Planet.
I know, right? That was...
Yo. I did enjoy him being like, so, you hit him on so the one good. Planet you knew I'd never return to, and just like subtext in my head was like, because of sand.
It's so coarse. Gets everywhere.
It does get everywhere.
Anyway, it basically me reading the comics is just like me coming on this podcast talking to you guys about Easter eggs, and you guys like talk about real things, and I'm like, but what about the sand?
No, we should always talk about sand.
Can we have like, can one of our listeners just like put together like on the Facebook group, like can you just put together a sand counter?
Like we should
like a running tally of number of episodes where we mention sand and number of episodes, or specifically make the sand joke, because we would never mention sand without making the sand joke. But the sand,
we haven't either.
Yeah, like I don't think it's the word sand has ever been mentioned without being followed up with I hate sand. but like I want this running tally of episodes where we mention sand versus episodes where we don't. So get on that.
Me too. Yes. We're trying to make the Facebook group happen for people who are not Twitter people. So I'm trying, but I'm afraid of Facebook, but I'm trying. So I'll keep trying.
Slow progress.
Thank you for your patience.
Slow progress. Quality over, you know, hurrying fuck up or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, it's fine.
Anyway. So speaking of the coroner scene, that's a really pivotal moment for Aphra's character, so let's talk about that. So we learn a shit ton about her background from her monologue when she's talking to the coroner. You know, we learned that she's basically another casualty of war, because we haven't seen that in Star Wars before. You know, she talks about...
Wait, there's a war on?
Chris! Shush! Women are talking! Anyway... So
just one woman right now.
Kate contains multitudes.
That's so true. Never mind. I take it all back.
I'm so tired.
You should be. We're being Caucasian idiots today.
The Caucasity. Anyway, so so we learned a lot about Aphra's background from her scene with the coroner, and she kind of starts monologuing and talking about her history with the war and how it fucked up her life. You know, her mom died because of it. And besides the fact that she's a child of divorce, which, you know, is also terrible. But I just wanted to talk about how, you know, here's another war orphan, essentially, you know, at least in her psyche, I guess. You know, how has war shaped her specifically, and, you know, and the question around the outline is, how is she similar to and different from other Star Wars characters with PTSD that we've discussed, aka literally any Star Wars character? Go.
She has murder bots. That makes her different. That's not really a real point, but I do love the murder bots.
Factually correct, though. Factually correct. The murder bots are great.
I've had two factually correct points this episode.
Good Lord.
Keeks here, keeping us on track. But no, I have what? I wouldn't say this is a controversial opinion, but I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, Kate. I actually, and maybe this is just from me reading some of the Aphra comics too, which we'll get to, I don't know that her background changed her that much. She kind of strikes me as like, I feel like if she'd grown up with two parents and a cat and a dog and a white picket fence, I feel like she still would have, like, become this very rebellious, like, fuck it all, I'm gonna go, like, have fun stealing some shit person. Like, I feel like, I don't know, like, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, because to me, it, like, the way she's written, it's very deeply ingrained in her personality of this is who she is.
I mean, I'm not,
I think she might be a
that.
Sociopath, so that's my take.
Yeah, okay.
Wait, there are sociopaths in Star Wars?
Oh my god. Did you know there are also Asian people, even though there's no Space Asia?
Spasia.
Spasia. Sorry. Just fucking everybody's the worst.
God, Jesus. Anyway,
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up and make everybody really angry for no reason, except for the best reasons, but anyway. But I think she might be a sociopath. Like, that's not really, I don't even think that's that hot of a take. Like,
I don't think her, so either.
Like, indifference to Vader's constant being like, well, I'm gonna kill you eventually, and you know that. And she's like, I know you're gonna kill me eventually, and we both know that. Good talk, everybody.
I mean, I think there's something to be said for that, but just as a, I don't know if this is a counterpoint. Maybe this is more of a counterpoint for Chris, who just decided to start eating cookies in the middle of recording this podcast.
They're really good cookies.
Oh, they sound good. They sound good.
God. I wonder, though, about, well, maybe you probably have more information than me, obviously, because you've read the Afro comics, but it almost seems to me, though, that she became an opportunist because she saw that opportunists win, you know, because of the war. Like, I mean, she wasn't all that, I mean, I don't think her family is all that wealthy. It's just that, like, fucking came in and killed her mom because, like, they were there. And she was there, right? And I don't know if this is something that Aphra consciously thinks about, but it seems to me that her character is based around this classic trope of, I got fucked over by X, so to take control of that, I am going to use X to fuck over everybody else.
That's true, and that's super fair. I don't know, to me, and this isn't even so much a Star Wars thing, but this is very much a feeling that I have about Western-centered storytelling in general. There's a temptation to make every character, oh, if they had just grown up in a nice, healthy family, they'd be normal. Like, you know, like they have, there's this, and there's this temptation in all sorts of different media that is, if they'd just grown up in a wholesome family, they'd be great, and they'd be going to college, and they'd be changing the world and living their dreams. And like, I don't know, I feel like part of Aphra's charm to me is that this is, and honestly, like, I think you're right. I think the depth of my point may be wrong, and like, you may be right, but I also do feel like this is just kind of who Aphra is. Aphra was born to be a climber, and not in a legitimate way. Like, Aphra was born to be like, this is my situation. I'm ignoring the rules. This is how I can improve my situation. And that's just, like, kind of who she is. And that, like, is part of what makes her so fun and so incredible. And so, like in a weird way, inspiring of just, like, how she's done so much with basically nothing, like, but her intellect.
Right. I mean, I completely agree with you that the reason why I love her is, you know, part of the reason why I love her so much is because she breaks the mold of, I mean, most characters we've ever seen, you know, that use, like Star Wars does, the really classic storytelling structure. But also, I don't see why we can't both be right, honestly.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm willing to compromise on that.
That, like, Aphra is like this, but, you know, had circumstances been different, maybe she would have gone about, you know, finding her own success a different way.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm
now
more
I'll
than
come in and be like, Star Wars is nuanced. That's what I usually do. You guys make opposite points, and I go, you're both right. Great job, everybody. Chris contains multitudes. I just had to edit out a joke he made because we thought it was funny, but it was also offensive because we know him, etc.
It was offensive because you know me. Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Absolutely not what I meant, but my brain is barely functioning as per usual.
Well, yeah. Anyhow.
It is about to be Thanksgiving. Roll Tide.
Keeks, do you have any final thoughts on Aphra before we kind of start wrapping this up? We've gone real
long. No. I kind of thought we were going to. I almost was like, do you want to stop in the middle? But I didn't bring it up for once. Because the people deserve the content,
you're
okay?
You're tired of Dad freaking out about the idea of splitting our podcast into two.
Yeah, because he doesn't like it when it throws the whole schedule off. I'm editing that out because that's the most disgusting noise I've ever made on recording. but no, I mean, I think you guys are probably both right, but I also have my take that I think she might actually be a sociopath just because, like, she puts so little value on human life.
Including her own.
In that way. Correct. But that doesn't necessarily make you a sociopath, just to add all of those disclaimers in there. And also, I don't know whether or not she is.
It would fit, though, because he's got those... The murder droids are legitimate sociopaths, so, you know, whatever.
I know. Oh my god, the murder
droids
are my favorite.
They're so well written.
I love them.
They're so funny.
Like, they're just,
oh
they're
my god.
So fun.
I started screaming when I got to the bit where Triple Zero is betting on, what is it, Hollow Chest?
Oh my god.
Yeah, and like he's just like, let's shake for a good game. And then he gets interrupted. He's like, god damn it, I didn't get a chance to kill that motherfucker. And BT's like, that's fine, I'll just kill them all for you. And Triple Zero's like, what did I ever do to deserve you? And I'm like, fucking screaming. It was so great.
Honestly, like, even if the Vader parts were bad, which they're not, and I like think they're fantastic and it's one of my favorite comics, but even if the Vader parts were just garbage, Aphra and BT and Triple Zero alone are worth the price of admission in this comic. It's just so good.
1,000%.
Alright, well, we can start wrapping this up. I want to ask our usual question that we ask at the end of books and at the end of comics. How did telling this story using the comic medium add to the Star Wars universe as a whole?
I think that Aphra is a character who is tailor-made for comics. You know, she's got, you know, she's always in the middle of the action, but she's also got these really great one-liners that you kind of just want to savor, and you don't really get to do that with the movie because it just moves on, obviously. The way that they write her and draw her is that her comedic timing is perfect. You know, there's a beat in one panel, and and the other shoe drops in the next one, and she's perfect for comics, besides the fact that I love her a lot.
God, that's so true. I hadn't even, like, I kind of, like, put this question on the outline, like, at the beginning, or whenever we finish something, and I didn't really know where I was going to go with it this time. That's so true. Like, she really is just perfect for comics.
I love her. I do.
She would actually love you back because she's queer. It's great. We'll talk more about that later, obviously.
It's true. We're going to learn much more about Aphra. I'm in Vader and in Star Wars, but also in her own comic that, like, it's important to keep, like, a very important thing to keep in mind as we read these is, like, reading them in the past, we know that Aphra is so popular that she gets her own standalone comic. Like, that's what a crucial character she is to the Star Wars fandom at this point. Yeah, I don't know. I also
it's
feel
lit,
like
y'all. We love
is
her.
All lit. I feel like, and we've talked about this with the last time we read the Star Wars and Darth Vader comics, I feel like there's just something about this medium that, like, even more than a novel or a TV show, kind of the serialized nature of comic books really helps tell these kind of, like, miniature stories in a way that hasn't been done in the is not done anywhere else in the canon, and, like, kind of helps us have, like, an Adventures of Luke Skywalker feeling without it being too cheesy. I said after I spent, like, the whole first half of the episode shitting on Luke.
Oh, I mean, it was definitely cheesy. It just was also, like, good.
Yeah, it was Star Wars cheesy.
Exactly, like, it works. It works for what Star Wars is.
Yeah.
Like, we love it when R2 pukes out a bunch of lightsabers for everybody.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Good Star Wars cheesy.
Yep.
All right.
Cool. Easter eggs? Hondo was not in it. Kristen, did you have anything else?
I actually did. I put it on the outline, but I just did it just now because I didn't open it before today. it was when Chewie is, like, shaking the shit out of the bounty hunter on top of the building. And 3PO goes, where did he go? And Chewie goes, I let him go. Because, like, he was shaking him above, like, the street. It's just, I treat that as an Easter egg just because it's, like, 3PO fuck shit stupidity when he doesn't understand, like, nuance.
Yep.
He means he killed him. He means he dropped him to his death. And 3PO was like, that's nice of you.
I mean, that's classic 3PO, isn't it? Everything just goes way over his head.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my god.
That's always good to see. It's very consistent.
Kate?
Actually, I have two now because I remembered what my other one was. Anyway, my first one is that when Luke is finally ready to do his actual gladiator fight or whatever the fuck you want to call it in Grakus the Hutt's arena, the Game Master gives him a lightsaber. Luke is like, this isn't my fucking lightsaber. And the Game Master's like, fucking deal with it. And it's yet another case of Luke losing his blue lightsaber to receive a green one. Or, yep. Pre Return of the Jedi, he makes a new one, obviously, but, you know, whatever. My second one is that Chewie literally rips a droid's arms off, as is threatened in A New Hope.
I have two as well, and one of mine is very similar, that there's a running joke that Chewie hates losing it to Jarek.
Oh, yeah, this thing, some guy who's just like, that Wookiee got fucking pissed at me when I beat him to Jarek. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that, I laughed very hard at that. Again, because of the joke in A New Hope about Wookiees will rip your arms off if you beat them at Holochess. And then my other favorite Easter egg was one of the holocrons in Grakus' palace contained everyone's second favorite to Gruta, Shaak Ti.
I'm not even going to argue with that because I love Ahsoka so much, but whatever.
Oh, Shaak Ti.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Kate's just like looking at me because like it's like a running like thing between us that anytime like Shaak Ti appears in Clone Wars or the prequel trilogy, I'm just like, fucking Shaak Ti. What do you even do? She's great. She's done nothing to deserve this. It's just like it's just become a thing. So just constantly fucking up.
Anyway.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. We've gone quite long and we're not at all organized this episode. So really par for the course. Thank you for listening to us and reading Star Wars Volume 2 and Darth Vader Volume 2. And next week, we are on to a new book. We are on to From a Certain Point of View, which, for the uninitiated or those who have not heard us talk about, is the collection of 40 stories celebrating the 40th anniversary of A New Hope coming out in 1977. And we are going to be reading the first, I want to say 10 stories. I counted it out at some point. We're going to be reading the first 10 stories, Ramus through the Luckless Rodian.
So that's including the Luckless Rodian.
Including the Ruckless Luckless.
The Ruckless Lodian.
Exactly. Yes. Ramus through including the Luckless Rodian.
Good.
Inclusive.
Job.
That was
meaning inclusive.
That was hard. Everyone who's listening to this, whether you're at work or whatever, just say that out loud 10 times fast. I dare you. But no, it's great. I read about a quarter to a third of the book myself at various times and then like just ran out of time. But I've read all these stories and I'm so excited to talk about them finally. I'm so excited for Kate to read them because I read like the first three and I was like, Kate, you need to read these. Kate, I need to talk about these. I need to share my feelings with someone.
Wait, is that...
And then we didn't do it yet.
Is that including the Qui-Gon story that we're
It does include the Qui-Gon story.
Fuck! All right. By Claudia Gray, guys. Our favorite.
Favorite author of the pod.
One of the favorite authors of the pod.
One of the favorite authors.
Indeed.
We love them all. But...
We do.
That has been our show. Join us next week as we start From a Certain Point of View, Ramus through the Luckless Rodian. Hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, at BookWarsPod, BookWarsPod on Facebook, BookWarsPod@gmail.com over email. We love interacting with everybody. We swear we're not just going to yell at you unless you're dumb.
Yeah, we have both a Facebook. Yeah, we're generally pretty nice. Thanks for everybody who participated. I'm going to let Kate say it because she ran the BookWarsPod as usual Twitter account during this.
Thank you, everyone, who, again, participated in hashtag Star Wars Representation Matters. In case y'all missed it, we, again, publicized the hashtag on November 17th, which otherwise known as Life Day, which is a very important day in Star Wars canon, this time focusing on queer representation in Star Wars, or extreme lack thereof, if you're only watching the movies, because Jesus Christ. But we were happy to see people still excited about the hashtag and still participating. We're hoping to, you know, run this hashtag every month, focusing on a different segment of diverse representation. We haven't landed on a date or a topic for December yet, but I'm sure that's coming up soon. But again, thank you for joining in on the conversation. And I mean, it's a hashtag, like, jump in literally anytime you want. And pretty much all of us are sitting around and trolling that hashtag, waiting to retweet you anyway, as long as you're not a giant asshole who wants to tell us that there's no Asia in space, in which case you should look in the mirror and feel bad about yourself.
Yes.
Also, if you get trolled, Kate, just did you say Chris Senor, because I've been like yelling at trolls for like a week and a half, and it's been great. I love
Chris
it. It's my favorite pastime.
Chris is on constant troll patrol, so if you are a person of color or a queer person or whatever,
just whoever. If you're trolled at all, I'm happy to yell at people for
you. Yeah, like if you don't have the fucking mental bandwidth to deal with that shit that day, like, which is totally fucking understandable. Like, I speak from experience for obvious reasons. If you've listened to the pod before, I am very depressed. Seriously, just...
Oh my god.
Seriously, though, just at Chris Theodore on Twitter. He is happy to scream at people for you because that is what he does best. And also, he finds it funny.
I feed on family.
Yes.
Rage. Well, yeah, but yes. Also, like, let's give some emotional labor to white heterosexual cis men, which Chris checks off all those boxes. He is happy to take that on for you.
This is a one-time offer that you're never going to get from another white, cisgender, heterosexual male.
Oh my god.
Anyway, hit us up on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Carrot Design. Before we get any more off the rails and just start cracking up into the mic, I am Chris. For Kate and Kristen, thank you so much for listening to episode 27 of the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next time.
I want to know what you're drinking, but I'm going to save it for the pod.